from DogNation.com. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented by Marco's Pizza. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
It is not often that I say good things about Florida players here on this show. After all, I've sort of tried to establish the brand of being the lead Gator hater in this Georgia-Florida rivalry, and we've explained this many times before, but it's also probably worth, you know, mentioning one more time here that we talk about hating and we talk about, you know, Gator hating and, you know, sports rivalries and things like that. We're not actually talking about hating people. You know, it's not my advice would be not to hate anyone in your life. That's not probably a very good emotion. But in the realm of sports, hate is fun. In the realm of sports and the sort of, you know, lighthearted, sort of away from the super serious stuff, because there's certainly plenty of hate in the real world. In the sports world, hate is just sort of a nice, fun, interesting distraction that, and rivalries are the thing that makes college football great. So here in the sort of lowercase letter world of sports hate, we talk about the fact on this show a lot that Georgia fans ought to hate Florida. It ought to be Georgia's number one rivalry, and we've said that a million times. However, every so often a Florida player might pop up and say something that you kind of admit, you know, it's kind of hard to hate that. It's kind of hard to deny. That's sort of a cool perspective. And maybe an example of that from Florida defensive lineman C.C. Jefferson, who was a part of the Florida contingent yesterday at SEC Media Days, and he was meeting with the reporters talking about the Georgia-Florida rivalry, and Jefferson actually gives Georgia fans a really nice compliment here. So as an attempt to, I guess, be fair and balanced here for a moment, let me let you hear a Florida player saying something about Georgia fans and the atmosphere created in Sanford Stadium that I think Georgia fans are going to have to say, you know what, that's kind of a nice thing to hear from a Florida guy there who apparently wishes his team came to Sanford Stadium a little more often than it has over the last few decades. Here is C.C. Jefferson from Florida giving Georgia and its fans a pretty cool compliment. Take a listen to this.
I kind of wish we went to Georgia and played at Georgia. I wouldn't mind it, man. I wouldn't mind it. Because I ain't going to lie, it gets lit between them hedges, man. You know, at night, I seen where they, you know, light the cell phones up and stuff. And, man, it gets loud in there, man. And I think we should... I wouldn't mind, like, going from our stadium to their stadium every year. You know, we don't have to go to Jacksonville every year.
So he says, I wouldn't mind going to their stadium. It gets lit in there. He describes the fourth quarter, the Krypton theme, where the cell phones are lighting up Sanford Stadium. I got to tell you, that's kind of a cool thing to hear from C.C. Jefferson. And as I said a moment ago, it does make hating Florida a little harder to do, at least briefly for a moment, when C.C. Jefferson's sort of throwing around compliments like that for Georgia fans. And I think that's probably an important thing to sort of start our program with here today, given the fact that SEC Media Days is going on this week in downtown Atlanta. Because I think overall, some of the stuff that happens with Florida yesterday at SEC Media Days, maybe it gets mischaracterized a little bit. Maybe some of the stuff that you heard from some of the Florida players sort of initially sounds like some of the things you've heard from Florida players in the recent past. And maybe the actual truth is a little bit more complicated than that. Let me explain kind of what I'm meaning here. If you're watching on video, I wanted to show you this tweet on the screen. And if you're listening radio or podcast, I'll read it to you. Graham Hall is a good reporter that covers the Florida Gators. And the aforementioned C.C. Jefferson, we just heard some audio from there a moment ago. C.C. Jefferson meeting specifically with Florida reporters. Graham Hall tweets out a quote from C.C. Jefferson. I want to show you this on the screen so you can see it. The quote here from C.C. Jefferson is, first off, hats off to Georgia, Jefferson says, on a great season. When we beat them this year, it's going to feel really good. That's C.C. Jefferson, as quoted by Graham Hall, who covers the Florida Gators there. He put that out on Twitter. And when I first saw that tweet yesterday, and it kind of bounced around a little bit of the afternoon, I'm like, oh, goodness. You know, here we go again with Florida. I even talked about this on Twitter last night. Florida sort of being a clown show a bit as of late. A lot of meritless bragging seeming to go on with the Florida Gators. This was true last year with Chauncey Gardner. I think it was true with, like, you know, some of those defensive backs going back to what they said about Tennessee during the 2016 season. There's just a lot of sort of, like I said, meritless bragging going on with Florida as of late. C.C. Jefferson sounds like he's kind of in that group there with that quote. And even some of the stuff that Dog Nation gathered, there's a way of sort of hearing that makes it sound like, is Florida, you know, who I think is Georgia's biggest rival, is Florida just really this delusional? For instance, here's a little more of C.C. Jefferson saying that he thought the game 42-7 that Georgia blew out Florida a year ago, he thought it was closer than maybe the final score indicated. Here's Jefferson on that.
Oh, most definitely, because if you look back a year before, then that's the same backfield, some of the same old linemen, so same defense, so Yeah, I would say that we are that close, and that score doesn't determine, you know, that who's the better team.
So that's C.C. Jefferson's thoughts on that. He's one of the leaders for the Florida defense. One of the leaders for the Florida offense is the left tackle Martez Ivey, and Martez Ivey echoed some similar thoughts, that the Florida-Georgia rivalry, or as we say here, the Georgia-Florida rivalry is really, really important, and he thinks that there's a chance that Florida kind of gets back in this thing and makes it much closer in 2018. Here's Martez Ivey on that.
Since the 3 years I've been here, I felt like that was like the most intense game I felt like we were ever going to play. You know, just see how, like, Florida, like, always ran the ball on Georgia as coming in as a freshman. You know, just seeing how physical it was, you know, seeing all the trash talk. I remember the hit when Brandon Spike put on that running back, I believe. That's how I knew. I was like, oh, this is going to be the most intense game I play in my life. And just, I was, like, trying to prepare myself for it and just understand, like, get out there, you know, like, what's going to happen under the pile of the trash talk that's going to happen. And just, that's getting way closer than what the scoreboard put out last year.
I think the hidden meaning from what Martez Ivey's trying to say there is that he hopes that intensity returns here in 2018, because I think it's safe to say that from the perspective of most Georgia fans, that intensity was really missing from the 2017 game. Florida barely put up a fight in a 42-7 final. You heard Martez Ivey on that. You heard C.C. Jefferson on that same subject. Maybe a slightly more realistic assessment coming from the Florida linebacker, David Reese, who seems to have maybe a little more accurate memory of how the game actually played out. Here's David Reese.
They came to play, you know, they had an older team that, you know, all came back for the fifth year, and they had a great squad last year, and they went far. They had two of the best running backs probably in college football. That game just, you know, we let that one slip away.
Yeah, you really can't find fault with what David Reese says there. That's a pretty accurate assessment of the game, because overall, you know, the game was not closer than the score indicated. And, you know, as sort of proof of this, I remember what Todd McShay tweeted back during the spring. McShay's the ESPN NFL draft analyst. He's got no ties to the SEC, no ties to Georgia, no ties to Florida. I think we talked about this at the time. You may remember this from Todd McShay. If you're watching, I'll show this to you on the screen. He says, studying the Florida-Georgia tape, the first three quarters of this game is one of the biggest – he uses a different word, I'll say rear-end kickings, I can remember. Sony, Chubb, etc. are running wild in this game. So that's an example of what a neutral observer thought about the Georgia-Florida game, that it was a complete and total drubbing, a rear-end kicking the way that that Todd McShay describes that. And, you know, a lot of what you sort of see on social media from Florida players yesterday makes it sound like they are delusional in that regard. I think the actual truth, though, is probably a little more complicated than that. For instance, let me go back to C.C. Jefferson here for a moment, who kind of, you know, speaking to some other reporters in a different situation, I think his assessment of what happened during the Georgia-Florida game a year ago is probably maybe a little more in line with what Georgia fans think about it. And, by the way, the other reason why I play this piece of video or audio I'm about to play for you, for Georgia fans who are sort of hungry to see Florida humbled in this series. After all, I heard from a million Florida fans over the last, you know, 24 hours or so about how Florida's won 21 of the last 28 in this series, and there's a lot of bragging that goes on from Gators fans in that regard. For Georgia fans who were sort of longing for the day when Florida could be humbled once again in this series, last year I think an example of that, and C.C. Jefferson's other description to other reporters of this game, I think is validation for Georgia fans of exactly what they wanted last year to be. Here's more from CC.
My teammates pick on me all the time because, you know, when we played Georgia, the point spread was 14.5. But they made us shirts that said Florida Gators 14.5, .. And I still wear that shirt till this day. And my teammates are always like, man, throw that crap away, burn that crap. And I'm like, man, it's a constant reminder every day, you know, that I never want to feel like this again. I never want my teammates to feel like that again, you know, because if you go back and look at that Georgia game, man, it's just, they scored, 21 points in the first three drives? And it just happened so fast. They looking at me as a leader. You know, I kind of didn't know what to do myself. You know, I was kind of stuck. And I never want to feel like that again, man. I just want to be mentally and physically prepared for every moment that comes, you know, whether we're down 21-0 again and we have to come back, or we're up and we have to maintain the lead. You know, I just want me and my team to be ready.
I mean, to me, I can't find fault with C.C. Jefferson there either. To me, that's a player obviously disappointing the outcome of a game, giving credit to its opponent. So I'm going to, congratulate C.C. Jefferson on having the right perspective there about the Georgia-Florida game from a year ago. And I think if you're wondering why in the world we're even talking about this today on Dog Nation Daily presented by Marco's Pizza, I think it's this. I think as Dan Mullen takes over the Florida job, I do think he takes over a program in turmoil. And this is relevant for Georgia because, you know, I think that over the course of the last few decades and the next few decades probably as well, Florida will continue to be, in good years and bad years, the measuring stick for Georgia in this division. And Florida as a program has been a mess. There has been a lot of awful, ridiculous, goofy trash talk coming from Florida over the last couple of seasons. It's Chauncey Gardner last year. It's other players from the 2016 season. You know, back in the 90s, Steve Spurrier was one of those guys that talked trash and backed it up. You didn't like him necessarily as a Georgia fan, but you gave him begrudging respect. What sort of Florida has sounded like in recent years, though, has been a little bit more like less Steve Spurrier and a little more like a guy like, say, LeVar Ball, who just sort of pulls these random brags out of thin air that seem to have no connection to reality whatsoever. That's what Florida has been. I think it's Dan Mullen's goal to try to change that. You saw the metamorphosis of that maybe starting to take shape at SEC Media Days yesterday. But have no mistake, no matter what Florida fans want the world's largest outdoor cocktail party to be this October, I think Georgia has plans for another beatdown when you get to that game later on the 2018 season. My name is Brandon Adams. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented by Marco's Pizza. Good to have you with us. If you're checking us out on video, thanks for watching us. Dog Nation Facebook page, YouTube page, the Dog Nation Twitter feed. We're live there every morning at 10 a.m. We're on the radio at noon with our friends in Athens on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref. And in podcast form, pretty much wherever you can find podcasts, the Apple Podcasts, the Google Podcasts, on the Android devices, SoundCloud, the world-famous DogNation.com. We're just really, really glad that you found Dog Nation Daily here today. Thanks for making us your choice for Georgia coverage here. We love facilitating this conversation each and every day, and we're really grateful that Marco's Pizza makes it all possible. Right now, Marco's Pizza got a great deal for you. Say hello, Primo, with two medium, two-topping pizzas for just $6.99 each. I love that price on authentic Italian-quality pizza. It's made every store every day the Italian way, and you know, when you get a family like I have, you know, my kids, they don't want the same stuff that my wife and I want. So, you know, get them the pizza they want, get us the pizza we want, and it's $6.99 each. That's a very inexpensive way to feed the whole family on some good food that everybody's going to be happy and enjoying. Anytime that I tell the kids that we've got Marco's Pizza on the way, they're always really excited about that. So go to Marcos.com to find the Marcos nearest you. We'll check in with Mike Griffith here in a moment from SEC Media Days. He continues Dogs Nation's coverage from downtown Atlanta. Should be some pretty interesting stuff coming up on today's show. But speaking of interesting, let me transition actually to something else that happened at SEC Media Days this week. You know that one of the real stories in the SEC is how Jeremy Pruitt's going to do in his first year at Tennessee. And Aaron Murray, the former Georgia quarterback, the CBS Sports analyst now, a friend of Dog Nation Daily, he's been with us before, speaking to 102.5 The Game in Nashville. That's a sports radio station from up there in Tennessee. He made no bones about speaking to some Tennessee fans who are listening in on that, that he thinks that Jeremy Pruitt, the brand-new Tennessee coach, is going to have a very tough time making the transition from coordinator to head coach, and he didn't mince words about it. Listen to the former Georgia quarterback here from Nashville Sports Radio.
First off, talent-wise, they're far behind right now. I mean, talent-wise, it's not even close with them, South Carolina, Florida, Georgia. It's not there. So, I mean, he has a huge mountain to climb just to get them competitive in this league right now. And two, honestly, I don't know if his personality is fit to be a head coach. I don't. As a head coach, there's so many things that go into it. It's not just going out there and coaching. You have to deal with front office. You have to go talk with the president of the university. You have to deal with boosters. You have to deal with the offense, the defense. It's not just going there and dealing with the kids and scheming up. There's a lot that goes into it. I don't think he's the right guy to kind of be the CEO of a corporation. He's really good managing just a defense and being a defensive coordinator. He needs to prove to me that he can handle the whole ship. For right now, I don't think he can.
As you might imagine, the the host speaking to Murray there, a little bit dumbfounded by just how blunt he was being. They wanted to follow up with him on exactly what he meant by that. And Murray then went into some more detail about what it is about Jeremy Pruitt he's seen from his past that makes him seem like he might be unfit for Tennessee in the future. Here's more from Aaron Murray.
Mine is when he was at Georgia, and the way he acted, the way he treated Coach Rick, I thought was poor. He wasn't as respectful as I thought a defense coordinator should be to a head coach. So that's my thing with authority. When he's dealing with the athletic director, when he's dealing with the president, when he's dealing with a booster who's giving millions of dollars, you can't go tell him to screw off. You have to take the meeting. You got to sit with them. Yeah, I know you want to be game planning, getting ready for the game, but you're a head coach now. You have to do these other things. Like I said, I think he's a really good defensive coordinator. I think he's, when he has one mission, he's really good. But when you have to be pulled in 100 different directions, you have to be respectful and sit in all this other stuff. He needs to show me he can do that. I'm not saying he can't. He needs to show me he can, and that's his biggest hurdle as a head coach.
I think that's really fascinating from Aaron Murray. Later on in the show, I actually want to play you some audio from Chip Towers from about a year or two ago on Dog Nation, who seems to maybe have agreement, at least then, with what Aaron Murray's saying right now. Here's what I'll say about the Jeremy Pruitt era at Georgia, though. Murray says disrespectful to Mark Richt. I wasn't in the room. I can't say that for sure. But I do believe that Pruitt at the time, when he was defensive coordinator in 2014, 2015, brought a degree of toughness that Georgia really needed. And Kirby Smart's obviously taken that to a different level since taking the job in 2016. But the meager success that Georgia had in those 2 years that Pruitt was here, I don't think he would have even enjoyed that had he not been here. He changed a lot of things for the better of the Georgia program. So I sort of look back on the Pruitt years here fondly, even if his relationship with Mark Richt wasn't as well and good as some people hope it would be. It's good to have you with us here today on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza. As promised, let's talk to Mike Griffith right now.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
Nobody's had better coverage of SEC Media Days all week long than our buddy Mike Griffith from Dog Nation, including on Tuesday when Georgia made its turn there. Kirby Smart leading some Georgia players in the room there that day. And Mike, first of all, good morning. Thanks for being with us on the program today. Hope you're doing well.
Yeah. Hey, BA.
Good to talk to you. And I want to go back to what Kirby Smart discussed yesterday. And obviously a lot of the questions in all the various rooms were about the quarterback situation. And there was a word in particular that I read, quote from Kirby Smart, one of your pieces up at DogNation.com, where he talked about the way that Justin Fields is getting acclimated as being the number two quarterback. And he used the word quickly. And that word jumped out to me because when you listen to the overall tone from Kirby Smart yesterday and all the things that he said about Justin Fields, obviously there's a level of confidence that seemingly Smart projects about Justin Fields because of apparently how quickly he did get acclimated to college life. There was nothing from what you heard from Kirby Smart on Tuesday that makes you think that in any way he thinks there's a chance that Justin Fields is overwhelmed by stepping onto a stage as a college quarterback. I believe that Jake Fromm is still Georgia's starter. I believe he'll remain the starter for the entirety of the year. But what sounded to me yesterday, Mike, was Kirby Smart pretty confident in his backup quarterback.
Yeah, really, Kirby Smart confident with his team. You know, likes the work they put in the offseason, talked about the competition at all the positions, mentioned that they weren't going to get complacent, not running from expectations. You know, Brandon, a lot of these coaches, they try to avoid the elephant in the room. They try to avoid talking about it. They don't want to acknowledge it. And I really thought Kirby's approach yesterday fit well. I mean, he really embraced the pressure. He embraced the expectations. He went right at the questions about player personnel, whether it was Demetrius Robertson, how he felt about him transferring in, or D'Angelo Gibbs being back practicing with the team. I mean, I thought Kirby really stepped up his game, and it's my understanding he was the only coach that went through Radio Row. I mean, he didn't have to do that. But I think Kirby Smart, as a former Bulldog player, recognizes just what a special time this is for Georgia football fans and wants to take advantage of where Georgia's at in the collegiate football landscape.
Yeah, I mean, Kirby Smart, Mike, has always kind of come across to me as a coach who's sort of comfortable in his own skin. I do think that much like his mentor, Nick Saban, there's some calculation to some of the things that Kirby Smart says, but calculations I don't think should be confused with worried. I don't think that Kirby Smart's very worried about projecting himself at this stage of his career. I don't think he's too worried about how he's going to come across. I think that it sounds like you feel the same way, that in a league that sort of cultivates celebrity coaches, Smart may be on his way to being one, and certainly he feels like he's one of the big guys in the room as he walks around that hallway there at both the College Football Hall of Fame and, I guess, to a certain extent, the Omni Hotel too, right?
Well, you know, I think a team really kind of feeds off their head coach, and, you know, the feeling I got from the Georgia players yesterday was confident but not cocky. There was definitely a difference between how they represented themselves and how the Florida Gators talked. It's like almost as if the old Florida's back now. Now, the old Florida also was winning championships. This Florida's talking smack after a 4-7 season, and what I thought was a 42-7 blowout. I guess I must have missed something there, because the Florida players I talked to all said it was definitely or most definitely closer than the scoreboard indicated.
Yeah, we played some of that audio from earlier, and you had did a great job capturing that for Dog Nation. I hope a lot of people saw the video that you put up there, Dog Nation. I actually want to talk to you about that coming up in just a moment. I thought that was pretty fascinating. Let me squeeze in a couple more things on what Kirby Smart had to say before we get to the Florida stuff, which we kind of led off with here today. Demetrius Robertson was one of those issues, the Cal transfer, the former five-star guy. You know, Kirby Smart didn't do a lot of politicking, I didn't think, on Demetrius Robertson's behalf. What do you think the strategy behind that was? He's obviously excited about having Robertson. He's sort of free to talk about him a bit here. But what do you think the strategy was behind Kirby Smart sort of going hands off at the NCAA, essentially saying we don't know what the NCAA is going to do, and sort of, you know, acting like this was sort of an issue between D-Rob and the NCAA? What was the strategy behind that in your mind?
The same way you'd play a referee. I mean, you're not going to gain any points by openly politicking or trying to bully the NCAA. I mean, the facts kind of speak for themselves. I mean, here's a kid that only played two games last season and had surgery. You know, if you don't let him play immediately, he's essentially missing two full seasons in a row, almost completely two full seasons. It's a classic hardship situation. I mean, out in California, returning home on account of an ill relative and coming off a season where he only played two games and got a medical redshirt. So, you know, if his academic transcripts are in order, you would think that this would be a situation where the NCAA might make him immediately eligible. But, you know, Kirby's going to look at it that he's going to coach the guys that he knows for sure are going to play. And if Demetrius gets the eligibility, gets the hardship waiver from the NCAA, then he jumps in the receivers room and he competes. But until then, it's not like Kirby's desperate, and it would be unfair to the guys that are eligible that pick Georgia right out of the gate for Kirby to make too much of a deal out of this.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting point. You know, Chip Towers was with us on Monday, and I have great respect for his opinion on this subject. One of the things that he says is D-Rob being eligible in 2018 is a much bigger deal for Georgia than if he's not eligible until 2019. And while I understand where Chip's coming from on that, clearly it would be more significant. Speaking from the perspective of a fan here, I still think it's a pretty big deal for Georgia, even if you have to wait that year, because you potentially pair him with a couple of 2019 five-star signees or who are currently commits, guys like Dominic Blaylock and Jaden Hazelwood. At some point in time, I think Georgia's really due to truly upgrade its wide receiver core, and whether it happens in 2018 or 2019, you know, when Robertson's finally playing for UGA, I think it's going to pay off in a big way for the Dogs.
Well, you know, right now Georgia's got a window to a championship. You know, that's what we know, Brandon. And, you know, you never want to put guys off too far. In fact, Kirby was talking about, you know, the new redshirt rule and how he thinks sometimes the media might make a little bit too much out of it and says, hey, we're not sitting around the table saying this guy would be better in his fifth year as a redshirt than he would be as a true freshman. And he pointed out, you know, you look at these fifth-year guys, these fifth-year seniors that have been redshirted, how many of them really had an impact? And, you know, the answer is not many. In his mind, a guy can play or not play. And, you know, if Demetrius Robertson is the guy that can help Georgia out right away and is good enough to play this year, then you want him to be eligible, you know, and you want him to be around next year too. But, you know, what we've learned about college football is it's a game and now. Nobody in Sanford Stadium is going to sit back if Georgia loses a football game at home and say, well, you know what, let's just wait till next year. We're a now generation, and, you know, now is what matters. And, you know, you worry about the future in the future.
Yeah, I think that's interesting. You mentioned a moment ago what some of the Florida players said about Georgia yesterday, and I do want to talk to you about that. But in a weird way, Mike, the most interesting thing that a non-Georgia person said about Georgia at SEC Media Days this week may have been some of the things that LSU coach Ed Orgeron said about the atmosphere he expects in Death Valley and Baton Rouge when Georgia travels there in the month of October. And the reason why I thought that was so interesting is really twofold. If you want to go back years ago, Mike, it looked like Georgia and LSU may be on the verge of sort of a burgeoning rivalry here a bit. They played three times in SEC championships, two of the most intense atmospheres in Sanford Stadium in the certainly the 21st century, if not all time, were the 2004 LSU game when they came in as the defending national champs, the 2013 game, which was a great showcase of some pretty good passing games. You've had intense atmospheres in Athens for LSU games before, and now Georgia, because of its status as the reigning SEC champ, is sort of that team apparently with a bullseye on its back when it goes on the road. And from that standpoint, the way that Ed Orgeron foreshadowed that trip for Georgia, I found that to be really interesting. Did you sort of find it the same way?
Yeah, you know, and he alluded it to being a night game, even though it hasn't been scheduled yet. And, you know, we all kind of think it's going to be a night game, but until they actually schedule it, you know, there's a little wiggle room there for the television networks. But Ed Orgeron seemed pretty confident it was going to be a night game. He said it was going to be a special environment. He said the stadium would come alive and the tailgating would be active, which I'll tell you, you know, I've made a lot of trips to Baton Rouge. I used to live on the Gulf Coast and been to Tiger Stadium several times, and it can get pretty crazy, not just in there, but outside of there. So, you know, I think this is going to be a pretty raucous environment. It's hard to say right now where these teams will be. I think both will both have high hopes this year. Obviously, for Georgia, it's going to be a marquee matchup on the road. You would think they would get a lot of exposure.
So you were with the Florida players yesterday. You got an interesting piece up at DogNation.com, some video of them and their thoughts on what happened at the Georgia-Florida game a year ago. And I guess my overall thoughts on this, Mike, are a little bit complicated. On the one hand, certainly over the last few years, I have seen a lot of what I think is empty rhetoric from Florida. Some of that was Chauncey Gardner a year ago. Some of that was, you know, Wilson and Tabor going into the Tennessee game of 2016. It just sort of feels like the kind of meritless bragging in comparison to the true swagger that the Steve Spurrier era Florida teams had in the 90s. You know, yesterday I saw a guy in CC Jefferson who's maybe doing his part to try to change that, although clearly, you know, he still, I guess, was quoted as saying some things yesterday. Overall, what was your take on how the Florida players currently view the rivalry they have with Georgia?
Well, I think they just wanted to have fun with the interviews. You know, I think that was the message from Dan Mullen. I think he wants Florida to get back to being loose and having fun and feeling good about themselves and feeling confident. And that was the message. And, you know, it's funny. I know Georgia fans are irritated by it. Obviously I covered Tennessee, and I know how irritated by it Tennessee fans were, too. But let's be honest. It's kind of fun to have a team like Florida in the league that talks this kind of junk and kind of gets the blood flowing in the off season and gives you a reason to care a lot, you know, because as you said, on the field, they really haven't given you much reason to care or stoked much, fear in many teams this last season. So the fact that now maybe Georgia has a little bit more of an edge, I'll tell you, I was actually more interested in what he said about wanting to play between the hedges.
Me too.
You know what? These college players, they want to play in different stadiums. And I'm kind of with them on this, you know. And I know, you say, Mike, you're new to this. You don't understand this rivalry in the college. Well, I do understand. I used to cover the Iron Bowl in Birmingham. And when they finally made those games go back and forth between Alabama and Auburn, you know, I thought that was a real benefit for the fans. And, I appreciate that it's in Jacksonville, but, you know, Sanford Stadium is a special place. I mean, we're talking about one of the most beautiful. Certainly, it's a better stadium than what they have in Jacksonville. It's a better game day environment than what they have. I mean, it's special. It's a part of Georgia, and of course, players are going to want to play there. And why not rotate that in? Where maybe a guy who plays at Florida and Georgia, they get to play in each stadium and play in Jacksonville. You know, every 4 years you go, you know, Georgia, Jacksonville, Florida, Jacksonville. Where the players get the opportunity to play in these stadiums. I'm kind of with them on this one, and I would say that for all the rivalries. I'm a big proponent of the home and home, not the biggest fan of the neutral site games. I think you save the neutral sites for the bowl games, not the preseason games.
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting point, Mike. And speaking of scheduling, let's finish up with this. The Commissioner Greg Sankey spoke at SEC Media Days this week. You wrote about this at DogNation.com. And obviously, I think there's a lot of fans who would like to see a change to the SEC schedule, take on a ninth conference game, rotate with the cross-divisional opponents a bit more. But for now, Sankey seems to be towing the company line of the institutions like the what they call the 6-1-1 format, where you play the same West team every year and rotate the other game. Do you ever see in the foreseeable future a landscape change here where Georgia gets to see some of these other SEC West teams a little more, and fans overall get to see a deeper schedule that includes 9 SEC games as opposed to 8?
Not until Sankey feels the need for it. I mean, he did make the point, and as you said, you know, I wrote this story with all the numbers and all the SEC. But who's to say that the SEC teams couldn't accomplish the same thing with 9 conference games? And, you know, I'll say this, in 4 years covering the Big Ten and covering Michigan State, I was able to see every Big Ten stadium in 4 years covering the same program. And I think that's pretty cool. And wouldn't it be neat again, if the players were able to get – I mean, if that's really what it's all about, if it's really all about the players, aren't those experiences and, like you said, those road trips and that travel – isn't that what it's really all about? I mean, if it's really all about, you know, getting teams in the playoffs, and, you know, I suppose the dollar is always the bottom line, then I guess you continue on with, you know, the Alabama scheduling model, which, you know, I guess even Georgia's kind of dipped into that, kind of playing a nobody in November. I mean, to me, I don't like that. I don't like that. I understand it. It's a, you know, you got to do what you got to do. If, you know, if the guy next door is doing it to be competitive, you feel like you got to do it too. But that doesn't mean that it's right, and it doesn't mean that it's good for college football. Some of these Alabama opponents have been absolutely embarrassing.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, Mike. I really appreciate you weighing in on that. Your coverage at SEC Media Days has been top-notch. We appreciate you being with us here today. We'll look forward to reading a whole bunch more from you, and we'll talk to you again here on a Dog Nation Daily presented by Marco's Pizza very soon.
Appreciate it, Brandon.
Good stuff there from Mike Griffith on Dog Nation Daily. And I think what he says there about the neutral site game stuff is really interesting. Now, y'all know, those of you who are longtime listeners of Dog Nation Daily or viewers to our program, I like Georgia, Florida, and Jacksonville. It is a special tradition for me. I like traveling down there. I like going to that game there. But the one thing that's undeniable right now, and this is a very quick change, it's something that's only happened really recently. For the moment, neutral site games in college football are just a little bit out of style. They're just a little bit out of style. The Auburn-Washington game in Atlanta, I think currently right now, is not a technical sellout here. You know, there are tickets available for that game in Atlanta. That used to be unheard of for these neutral site showdowns. Now, the fact that Washington's coming from Seattle probably has a lot to do with that, but it's another example of this. Georgia going to Notre Dame last year was the talk of the 2017 season. Alabama, so much so, they got involved in this. Now they want to go to Texas. You know, Georgia fans, some want to see Georgia play Clemson, and they may do that in Atlanta at some point in time, or they may do that home and home. But right now, it's that home and home thing. And Chauncey Gardner talking about wishing he would have had a chance to play between the hedges, another example of that. Sometimes these trends can change pretty quickly. For the moment, this trend is moving the direction of people like home and homes. They like going to other stadiums. They like bringing people into their on-campus environment. Coaches love that because they can host recruits. It'll be interesting to see how long that particular trend stays sort of the hot topic in college football. But for now, that's the direction all of this is moving. Let's roll on here with Dog Nation Daily.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Always really fun to have Mike Griffith. He's a great addition to the team here at DogNation.com, and he has been doing a fantastic job of covering SEC Media Days. Make sure you read everything that he's written. A lot of stuff on Georgia from Tuesday, and a lot of really interesting angles here throughout the rest of the week as well. Mike is just going to be bringing you top-notch coverage here at DogNation.com, and we're glad he's here. Now, something that many of you who are listening right now are not glad about. I know that we have a lot of like dads and moms that listen to the show with their kids. And, you know, this is the time of year where like a lot of kids start to get a little nervous. You go to your local Kroger and you start looking around and you say, you know what? I see a lot of back-to-school items. Now, that's good news for some parents. It's not great news for all kids. Although, really, hopefully you're looking forward to getting back and starting a brand-new school year. But the point is, for the parents, and I'm right there with you. I got a little boy about to be in the first grade, a little girl that goes to preschool, but a little boy that's about to be in the first grade. So when I think about all that new stuff you got to buy, the paper, the pencils, the notebooks and all the little fancy erasers and things like that the kids always want, that can get expensive. That's why you want to really trust what I think of is like my headquarters for back-to-school shopping, which is Kroger. And, you know, they want you to stop by your Atlanta area Kroger right now and save on everything that you need, whether it be the notebooks, the glue, the pens, pencils, everything else in between. It's all there for you at your local Kroger. I'll be certainly doing a lot of that because, listen, here in Georgia, where we do this show from every day, we're only a couple weeks away. I guess about 2.5 weeks from the start of the 2018-19 school year. So please, 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 please think about Kroger when you're thinking about back-to-school shopping. All right, SEC Media Days does roll on day 3 today. We've got a handful of SEC teams who are there. Joe Moorhead will make his debut as Mississippi State coach here today. And Moorhead has already, I think, this year proven to be a bit of a darling of the media. I don't know if he was just like a source for like every story that had ever been written or what, but there have already been like a handful of glowing profiles written of Moorhead. He is a guy that is sort of thought of as being a bit of a cerebral coach. He's going to bring what he thinks is an innovative style here to a Mississippi State, and he's going to probably throw deep a little bit more than maybe Dan Mullen did. He wants to make Nick Fitzgerald in the image of some of the stuff that he had done with Trace McSorley there at Penn State. I imagine that there will be probably somewhat fawning coverage of Moorhead today. A lot of the national media types just seem to really like him. I have no beef against him, but this is a guy that national media types seem to really enjoy writing about, so I imagine that Moorhead will get some positive coverage. Tennessee's also going today, and it makes me think about what we talked about with Aaron Murray near the top of our show today, Murray questioning Jeremy Pruitt. How will Pruitt perform in his first SEC Media Days? When Kirby Smart, who's kind of cut from the same cloth, former Alabama defensive coordinator, when he made his debut with Georgia, 3 SEC Media Days ago, You could tell that Kirby Smart had really kind of gone to school on how to do this. Gave a long opening statement in the big room, the podium with all the media members in there. Really seemed practiced and maybe in some cases too rehearsed almost. You know, Pruitt is a slightly different guy from Smart, though. You know, how comfortable is he going to be in this environment? He hasn't had to speak to reporters at Alabama over the last couple of years. Did do some of that with Georgia. And, you know, Aaron Murray used the phrase CEO. You have to be a CEO to do this job. I think Murray's right about that. While I don't completely agree with Murray's assessment of Pruitt's time here at Georgia, he is right about the demeanor necessary to be a head coach. And this will be another example today of can Jeremy Pruitt pull that off in that moment. Alabama also goes to a day with Nick Saban on hand there, and they'll no doubt be a huge contingent following the Crimson Tide. A lot of questions on Tua Tagovailoa and Jalen Hurts almost for sure, and, you know, it almost becomes the issue of how well can Saban avoid saying nothing, because, you know, he's had transfer issues on both sides of this. Tua has threatened that. Jalen Hurts' dad has threatened that. You know, can Saban thread the needle here so that he completely avoids all controversy on that? We'll have to see if that indeed does happen. And then, of course, Missouri goes as well. And, you know, other than Drew Locke being a first-round pick, there's virtually nothing to ask Barry Odom, the head coach of the Tigers, although I do believe that Locke is going to be in attendance, so I'm sure he'll get a lot of attention. I also want to mention this here really quick. You know, yesterday on SEC Country Live, we talked about the fact that this is going to be our last week doing that show on the SEC Country video channels. Now, we invited people who like the show to check us out on our YouTube page and our podcast feed. And many of you who listen to the Dog Nation Daily podcast also listen to the SEC Country Live podcast. And I really appreciate that. I'm really grateful for your support on that show. And, you know, when SEC Country made the announcement to shut down, we always knew there was a chance that that show would be put at risk. And we were lucky to be able to fight for the show as long as we did. But listen, in some respects, change is inevitable. And this change for SEC Country Live is inevitable. At least it's turned out to be that way now. But here's the one thing I want you to know here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza. I am really, really excited about what's going to be taking the place of my time spent on SEC Country Live. I love working with Mike. I would have loved to have kept doing that show for the next 50 years. Mike and I are actually going to try to do some more things together here, and that's why the YouTube page is going to be an important thing to follow, SEC Country Live on YouTube. The podcast feed, SEC Country Live, the podcast, is going to be important to follow because Mike and I have a lot of plans for a lot of great projects. But in the meantime, I hope that you understand that my time not spent on SEC Country Live is going to be immediately devoted to a lot more really, really cool stuff for DogNation.com, both at the site, on video, podcast. I think you're going to be really excited about some of the additional things you're going to see right here on Dog Nation Daily every single day. So I wanted to make that very, very clear to you that I'm not the kind of person that sits on my hands, right? Y'all know that I have to be busy doing something, and so I'm going to be very busy at the business of Dog Nation here in the absence of SEC Country Live. But please check us out today at 3 p.m. Eastern Time Thursday as we kind of close out our final week and hope to do it in style, doing what Mike and I have always loved doing, which is talking about the SEC. And with that in mind, we'll make that the closeout for your SEC through. All right. And speaking of new stuff for Dog Nation, coming up in just a moment, I want to make that the subject of our Dog Day Q&A. We'll do that here in just a little bit and have plenty more on this with comments here coming up. But before that, I do want to go back in time because I thought near the top of our show when we talked about former Georgia quarterback Aaron Murray and what he said about Jeremy Pruitt. And if you're watching a video and you're sort of tuning in late, or if you're tuning into the radio show and you're kind of catching us here kind of in the middle of the broadcast, please go back and either find the podcast or find, you know, the video on Facebook or YouTube and check out what you missed here, because we played the audio from 102.5, the sports radio station in Nashville, of Aaron Murray kind of going in on Jeremy Pruitt, questioning his demeanor, talking about the behavior while he was defensive coordinator at Georgia, and saying if that's the Jeremy Pruitt that Tennessee's getting, then this Pruitt may not be very successful. He may not be able to get along with people. And while I didn't 100% agree with the total characterization of the Jeremy Pruitt era here at Georgia, it's fair to point out that if you want to go back to last December when Pruitt first got the Tennessee job, talking to Chip Towers about that here on Dog Nation Daily, Chip said then that, you know what, this is not a hire that comes without risk, because Chip was his sources on the Jeremy Pruitt era were top-notch. He knows a lot of the backstory and everything that happened with Pruitt here, and it sounds like, based on what Chip Towers said then, that he kind of agrees with some of the stuff that Aaron Murray has said this week. Here's Chip Towers from last December.
He is a good football coach. There's no question about it. But there's a lot of stuff that went on at Georgia. And look, you know, I mean, it did. You know, a lot of it, we can't write, you know, you can't get people to be quoted about it and that kind of stuff. His stay at Georgia was volatile, tumultuous, at the very least. And there were run-ins, and there were personality conflicts. So I think the biggest challenge for Jeremy Pruitt at Tennessee is Jeremy Pruitt. How is he going to handle all those other things that require some subtlety? Because there's not a whole lot subtle about this guy.
Subtlety is a really interesting word from Chip Towers, and there's not a whole lot subtle about this guy. And I think for Georgia fans, there are probably a couple different ways that you sort of connect and respond to this topic. First of all, you know, I think a lot of Georgia fans like me have somewhat fond memories of Pruitt's time here at Georgia. I think he sort of spurred some action around Athens. He sort of, you know, I think he sort of stomped on some complacency, which I think was kind of an important thing. From that standpoint, I think that Pruitt was you know, a good addition to the Georgia coaching staff, whatever his relationship might have been with Mark Richt. But now there's also the thing of Georgia looking up north to one of its SEC's rivals and saying, wait, is this thing for Tennessee, which has been a little bit chaotic over the last few years, is it about to blow up all over again with a coach who Aaron Murray thinks can't be a CEO, and Chip Towers wonders out loud, can he have the subtlety required to sort of get along with a pretty powerful and personality like his boss, Philip Fulmer, as athletic director, and everything that goes along with that? Maybe some fascinating stuff coming here from one of Georgia's rivals there when it comes to Pruitt's tenure there as Tennessee coach. Really good stuff from Aaron Murray and, of course, Chip Towers from in the past here on our Dog Nation Daily. Now, with that in mind, let me also shift gears here and do our Dog Day Q&A. We love doing this every single day. It's a chance for us to be more interactive. Many of you reach out to me on this topic on Twitter, at Dog Nation Daily, especially if you listen to the show, podcast, or radio. A lot of you on video respond in our comment section live, and we take these comments on the air. If you've never watched us on video, we sort of do an extended broadcast where it's very loose, and I just sort of chit-chat and do a lot of comments with you. And today, I have a very special Dog Day Q&A question that I want to ask you here. What would you like to see more of at Dog Nation? I'd love to, you know, love to hear your thoughts about that, because, as I said, we're going to be doing a lot more this season. You know, my promise to you has always been that Dog Nation grows and gets bigger and better each and every year, and hopefully each and every month. And here in our program, we hope to do a better job each and every day. We just want to keep bringing more and more content that UGA fans love. And this upcoming fall, I'm grateful for a chance to do a lot more of that, fully devoted to a Dog Nation in the time to come. And I'm curious to find out, what if you could sort of program what goes on here, what would you like to have more of around Dog Nation? Weigh in on me on that at the Dog Day Q&A, and we'll look forward to taking your comments on that, both at Twitter, at Dog Nation Daily, and live here in our comment section. We'd love to hear from you on that. All right. Let me also, we talk a lot about the Florida Gators here today, and of course, I've said before that I believe that a good Georgia fan's a Gator hater. And 101 days from right now, I think Georgia beats Florida again. It's our Gator hater countdown, and no matter where you land and what the Florida players said, it's nice to hear the Gators thinking about Georgia. We'll talk to you tomorrow.